Welcome to Casting Hope, a sermon podcast of Hope Presbyterian Church in Columbus, Ohio. My name is Joe Hack, pastor at Hope, and we are so glad that you are listening in. We would love to connect with you in person at our Sunday gathering. In the meantime, we hope this message points you to Jesus, the reason we gather.
So this time of year, I have pretty dry skin, and I've learned there are basically two ways to deal with these cracking hands. One is apply a lot of lotion all the time. The other is drink lots of water. All right? One, if you think about it, is an outside-in fix. It works immediately. But in my experience, it fades really fast. The other, just staying hydrated, who would have thought, takes longer, but it actually works. It's deeper. It's more of an inside-out change. It takes more time, but it is forever. We all want deep and lasting change, and we all sense that something is off in our life, and we're all in search of a solution in so many various ways, but too often do we not settle for lotion instead of water? Do we not settle for the outside-in, quick change approach instead of the inside-out approach? We look to diet, we look to the gym, we look to education and books, but again, like lotion, that change is only so deep. And over time, we sort of lose heart and we're back to where we started again. And we can actually do this, it occurs to me, with Jesus. Do we not approach him sometimes for a quick fix? Do we not often approach Jesus for inspiration that can change us for the day? But as we look at our life upon the years and years, we sort of ask, where has that deep change occurred? The Gospel of Luke, we've been exploring as a church, one passage at a time. And the Gospel of Luke, it occurs to me, reveals a Jesus who is not interested in quick, outside-in change. I wonder if you remember what he said in chapter 6, verse 45. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. And an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up, where? In his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. And so we focus on our lawn, which everybody sees, but Jesus focuses on the easy-to-ignore storage room in your basement, which nobody sees. The storage room buried deep within the core of our identity. The place nobody sees where God, our inner life, what Jesus calls the heart. In other words, Jesus is not an outside-in life hack. That's not who he is. He is a heart surgeon. In our text this morning that we heard Julie read, Jesus is going to do some heart surgery. If you look at verse 13 with me, the very first verse of our passage, someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And so kind of like the prodigal son who we will encounter in a few chapters, this person craves his earthly father's inheritance. And he wants to use Rabbi Jesus to help his agenda. That's what's happening in verse 13. This is not some polite request. This is a calculated and arrogant grasp. But I want you to notice how Jesus replies to this man, looking at verse 14 and following. Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter between you?" And then he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And then he told them his parable. So in other words, as we see here, Jesus is not content to stay on the surface, is he? Instead, Jesus does deep heart surgery in two ways. Number one, he exposes the heart. He warns against greed. What one theologian calls grasping. Grasping, lust, greed. It's invisible. It's a heart condition. And second, Jesus engages the heart with a story. Verse 16 says, he told them this parable. A parable is a story. Have you ever, I wonder, encountered a traffic barrier? You're driving on the road and there's this barricade. Most people honor the barricade and turn on the detour, but there's a few brave people who sort of ignore and call the bluff of the barricade and just kind of drive around and keep going. Maybe you're that person, I don't know. Stories do this. This is how stories work. They sneak past our mental roadblocks. And they get to what Jamie Smith calls our imagination station. The deep storage closet in our heart, right? Where our worship lives. Where our worship lives. That's where stories go. Where our deepest loves exist. Where our deepest trusts exist. Where our hopes hang out. Where our fears hang out. And that's why a good movie will always change our mind quicker than a good debate. Always. Let's look at Jesus' story again. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest, says Jesus. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, self, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said, you fool. This very night, your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? Verse 21. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. Now, what did you notice? I was a little on the nose in how I read the story. It is literally God-less. The story is God-less. This rich man is pondering his wealth without God. If you just look at the eyes in this text, you can almost hear Jesus emphasizing each of the eyes and each of the minds. What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. This is what I'll do. I will. Until, of course, I don't know if you noticed, God inserts himself in verse 20. What does he say? He says, you fool. So God does speak up, but he has to speak in to this rich man's imagination. He says, you fool. Now, this isn't just some, like, off-the-cuff insult. But it is a very precise medical diagnosis of the heart. That's what's happening. The fool has a very specific definition in the scriptures. I wonder if you're familiar with Psalm 14:1, which says, the fool says in his heart, look, there is no God. Theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar says, quote, our innermost constitution has been designed for dialogue. A fool talks to himself or herself. A wise person dialogues with God about everything. So what is Jesus doing with this story? He's engaging us at the deepest level. He says, look at your life, your money, your possessions, your planning, but do so, friends, from the inside out. Do so, friends, in dialogue with, in deference to God. See, Jesus is not a life hack. He's a heart surgeon. He reveals how to pursue inside-out change within. We're going to explore the remainder of his teaching this morning. He helps us and empowers us to pursue inside-out change in two ways. I'll put it this way. Number one, research your worries. And number two, replace your words. So first, Jesus invites you to inside out change by researching your worries and your fears and yes, your greeds, your graspings. In other words, allow these things to reveal the state of your heart. If you look at verse 22, Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear, for life is more than food, and the body more than clothes." So Jesus pivots, did you notice, from this rich man to his disciples. Unlike the rich man, his original disciples were materially poor, and they were subsistence people, so they lived day to day. And so for them, just this is helpful to remember, worrying about food was not, what should I eat today, but will I eat today? And worrying about clothing was not, what should I wear today, but if my one cloak dissipates, what will I wear today? For them, when Jesus taught them the prayer, "Give us this day our daily bread," it was not a spiritual metaphor. Daily bread was daily bread. It was a real act of trust. But I want you to notice that Jesus engages his materially poor disciples the same way he engages the materially rich man, from the inside out. The rich man, he says, beware of greed. Okay, so this is a heart that seeks without reference to God. To the poor disciples, he says, beware of worries and of fears. A heart that seeks without reference to God. We see this in verses 29 and verses 32. Do not set your heart, okay, your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. And in verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. And so whether it's greed, whether it's worry, whether it's fear, Jesus wants you to explore what's underneath. The seeking going on in the heart. What fuels the worry? What fuels the greed? What fuels the fear? You see? David Powell, he writes, "Our worries reveal the object of our worship." Our everyday worries, our unhealthy fears, because there is a such thing as a healthy food God gave us to keep us safe. And our grasping are like water lilies. We think they're just floating around, but they are anchored and they are fueled by underwater roots. And this is our worries and our fears and our lusts and our greeds and our graspings. They're all anchored and they're all fueled by a what? A worshiping heart. That's why. So our heart, think about it, was made to worship the Lord. That's how we were created. Our heart, therefore, can't not worship. Everybody is worshiping something. Sports, money, safety, security, popularity, sex, experiences. Everybody's worshiping something. There's no such thing as a non-worshipper, a truly secular person. There's no such thing. The question is never, am I worshiping? Is the fears and the hopes and the loves and the trusts and the obediences of my heart neutral on nothing? No, that's never the question. What's always true is that we are attaching our heart's greatest things to something or someone. And whenever we worship anything but the Lord who made us, okay? You can take this to the bank. It's like trying to fuel your car with water. It may work for a second, but it starts to break down. It's just not the way we were made. It's not the way we were made. And this means, friends, we should, with Jesus' invitation, research our worries, research our graspings, research our unhealthy fears, because they can point us, perhaps, to misdirected worship. Do you see? It's valuable information. It's the deep diagnosis that we all need. Sometimes people say, don't throw away your coffee because it's good fertilizer. Don't throw away your coffee grounds. It's good fertilizer. In the same way, don't just confess your worries. Do that. But don't just throw them away. Use them as fertilizer for growth. Explore what they reveal about the depths. How might your greatest worry reveal a misdirected worship in your heart? Something that is very good. Oftentimes, things that are the best gifts in life from God are the biggest temptations to settle our hearts worship about. So we hear the phrase from many teachers, idolatry of the heart. And we assume that idolatry of the heart are only bad, destructive things. And you know, often they're really good things. Family, safety, security, these are wonderful things. But when our heart directs its worship to these good things, that's when worry starts to come, right? That's when fear starts to emanate. That's when greed starts to tighten its grip. So let me just ask a simple question to begin. How might your greatest worry, your deepest unhealthy fear, what you notice you're grasping towards, how might that reveal an idol of the heart? Research your worries. And once we do that, we're empowered to replace our worries with worship. And Jesus invites us to do that in the remainder of our passage in 4 weeks. First, we can convert or replace the futility of worry to the simplicity of trust. Jesus said to his disciples in verse 22, "Therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and your body more than clothes. Instead, consider the ravens." Why? "Because they don't sow or reap, and they have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable are you than birds?" And here's where Jesus talks about the futility of worry. Who of you by worry can even add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why worry about the rest? Now, if you needed a proof text that birding is a spiritual practice, here it is. Jesus tells us to look at the ravens. This is the most unclean bird in Israel, by the way. So Jesus is being provocative. And he's saying, even the raven, this avoidable bird, is cared for by the Lord. And we have so much more valuable, says Jesus, than this raven. Besides, our worries, by contrast, don't even do anything. And so what we can do is when we notice our worries, we can then replace our worries, our complicated worries, with a simple trust, like the raven. Second, we can replace the exhaustion of worry with a restful faith. Look at verse 27. So those of you who are not into birding, but you're into gardening, here you go. "Consider how the wild flowers grow," says Jesus. "They do not labor or spin." So spin, think about creating something to wear, spinning clothing. "I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these." We have wildflowers growing in our garden, and that I can attest to. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today, and tomorrow is thrown in fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith, says Jesus. So what's happening? Jesus is encouraging us and telling us that if this is God's treatment of wildflowers, which can be eventually gathered up and that day used as kindling, how much more will the Lord care for his blood-bought lambs? That's the simple mathematical, logical equation of lesser to greater that Jesus is using for us. How much more? So this is an invitation from Jesus, I think, to replace the exhaustion of laboring and spinning with a restfulness. Consider the flowers. Third, we can replace the tight grip of worry with the open hands of a child. Verse 29, don't set your heart on what you will eat or drink, and do not worry about it. For the pagan world, the nations of the world, ethne, runs after such things. And your Father knows that you need that. But seek His kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. And so what is Jesus saying? He's saying, all who trust in me are adopted into God's family, and so God is our caring Father. The world we live in is controlled and ruled by a caring Father, not a distant deity. And this means we can relax our tight grip on God's good gifts and instead receive and hold what He gives us with empty hands of faith. N.T. Wright, the scholar, puts it this way. If the gods you worship are distant and removed or are simply nature gods without personhood of their own, then of course you'll be worried. If your God is the Father who calls you His child, what does it stop you from trusting? You can replace the tight grip of worry with the open hands of the child. This is our Father. And then lastly, we can replace the fear of worry with the freedom of generosity. Verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will never wear out. A treasure in heaven that will never fail. Where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So naturally, in this text, our eyes gravitate to the call to be radically generous in verse 33, right? But this can cause us to miss the radical generosity of God in this text. As sheep in His care, He gives us His attention and His committed care. He says, don't be afraid, little flock. For your Father has been pleased. His pleasure rests upon you. The Lord's pleasure rests upon you. And as a child of the Father, He gives us, says, the entire inheritance of our older brother Jesus. The Father has been pleased to give you what? The kingdom. Who is the king? Jesus. We are co-heirs with Jesus. That's what our Father is giving us. And this is a radical generosity from God that's easy to miss when we focus on verse 33. But when we see the radical generosity of God, we are now in a place to see verse 33 as a gracious freedom rather than a terrible burden. We can now sit loose on our stuff. We can sit loose on our chasing of experiences. We can experience what one author calls JOMO, joy of missing out. That can be our story. The joy of missing out. Because we're free. The radical generosity of God has been placed into our hands. The kingdom is ours. So what if the answer for worry, friends, is not technique, but self-forgetful worship? Let me say that again. What if the answer to our worries is not a technique, but is instead self-forgetful worship? And what if Jesus is inviting you to replace your worries to worship? Because Jesus knows how the heart is supposed to work. It's designed to worship and trust Him. And worries when the worshiping energy of our heart is misdirected to so many other things. And Jesus is graciously saying, I see that. And so, come, come and see the care of your Father. Come and see the kingdom that you are now co-heirs with. Come and see the pleasure of God that rests upon you that none of these things can offer you. An ancient soul doctor of the church once said the key to growth is, quote, an expulsive power of a new affection. An expulsive power of a new affection. In other words, you don't kill worry, you replace worry with something better, something bigger, something more beautiful, something more compelling. The way we change is when our affections set themselves on the Lord. And it expels what was previously taking all of our worship and all of our attention. When my dog, Dewey, when he runs away from us, if we keep the door open, we have a fence, don't worry, but still it's hard to get back in, even with that fence. I have to use the expulsive power of a new affection to get into the house. You know what that new affection is? Treats, food. He loves being outdoors, but he loves this much more food. That's the expulsive power of an affection. When I open up his jar of food, instantly whatever is occupying him outside is now redirected towards the food. The miracle for change is that we all need Jesus to be more compelling, more beautiful, more sure, more true, sweeter than even the sweetest thing. As I said, we usually worry about very important and good things. And the Lord is very merciful to broken reeds and smoldering wicks. Jesus is asking, am I not sweeter than your deepest desires? Here's a question to prayerfully ponder this morning as we close. How is God more than the good thing that you're worried about? How is God more caring than the object of your worry? How is God more powerful than the object of your concern? How is God more lasting than the object of your grasping? How is God more loving than the object of your greed, or the object of your worry, or the object of your unhealthy fear? How is He more loving, more extravagant, and more true? And so, hope, may we examine our worries and our fears and our cravings. Will we not waste them, but follow them the way a hunter follows tracks, so that we can be curious, so that our worship centers on the object that our hearts have been on worship, Jesus Himself. Lord, we ask that be true this morning. That you would convert our worries to worship. Step by step, day by day. Would you increase our worship this morning? Through your help, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening in. For more resources like this and to learn more about Hope, please visit our website at hopechurchcolumbus.org.